You are listening to Adventures Within with Jennifer Moon and Robert Watkins. Adventures Within is brought to you by Faction 2 of The Revolution in partnership with Kaechung Radio. Faction 2 of The Revolution is committed to creating alternatives to the established orders of both the bourgeois culture of the fine art world and the spectacle arena of representations that constitute popular culture, in order to stimulate a new society that is both socially aware and politically motivated. Adventures Within is fervent in its mission to heighten awareness in and of the personal and private realms in order to realize and sustain political action. The segregation of the personal and the political, the public and the private, the individual and the populace, are no longer expansive. This is Adventures Within.
Good evening. Ooh, that's loud. Hi, my name is Jennifer Moon, and welcome to the very first episode of Adventures Within. That was Robert Watkins doing the intro. He is my co-conspirator, I guess, or my collaborator. He is responsible for the second half of the show, which is music. Thank you, Robert, so much for working with me on this. I really appreciate it. I'd also like to take this moment to thank Solomon Bothwell, John Bertle, and Kaechung Radio for this exciting and expansive opportunity. Thank you both for existing in this world. And thank you for being so enthusiastic. I'm super nervous, and I came down here and Solomon's all, yay. So, and he's like, don't worry about it. So that is really helpful. I really struggled with this show. Solomon, he's like the founder of Kaechung, and John organized this special broadcast for the Perform Chinatown Festival. And John was the one who suggested like the revolution should do a radio show. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's so great. And I came down here to visit Kaechung, and it's super like amazing down here. It's like in the basement, and it's like all underground, and it feels very like revolutionary. And I was like totally reminded of that Christian Slater movie, Pump Up the Volume, which came out in 1990. And I remember I was still in high school at the time, and I totally loved that movie. And I saw it somewhat recently when I got out of prison, and I was like, oh my God, this is like so revolutionary, it's so great. So I like had this idea like, oh my God, I'm gonna be Christian Slater and pump up the volume. And it's like, I'm gonna inspire people to revolution, it's gonna be great. And so I wrote the outline for the show and got Robert to collaborate with me, and he was all enthusiastic and I was excited. And then I started writing out the show. And it was like giving me grief. I was really struggling with it. So I would put it aside and I wouldn't work on it. And then finally, like 3 days ago, I'm like, okay, the show's in 3 days. I gotta like really, you know, write this show out. So for the past 3 days, I was working on the show, like writing it out, like, cause I didn't wanna fuck it up, you know? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm allowed to cuss, right? Okay. So I didn't wanna fuck up the show, and I wanted it to be like perfect. And I kept writing it out, and I would like practice what I was writing out, and it sounded so like, it was grossing me out a little. Like I sounded like a combination of like disingenuous with like pretension. And it was like, and I would try to do it different ways. I'm like, well, maybe if I do it this way, or I switch things around, and I would kept like saying it, practicing out loud. And it's really hard to act like myself. I was like trying to be like, oh, I'm just be me. I'm just gonna act it out like it was me, but I couldn't do it. It was like there was that layer of just like, it was so obvious that I was reading something and it was not what I wanted. And I was still like really holding on to like really scripting the whole thing. And like last night at 7 p.m., I was finally like in despair and I was like, oh my God, this fucking sucks. I hate it. You know, what did I get myself into? And I like in despair called out to the third communal entity. I was like, 3CE, help me. And at that moment, I was like endowed, I guess, with this, like, I was able to kind of see myself like in it. Like I was in fear. I was not trusting myself. And I realized that this is my chance to practice faith. I'm really into this idea of faith, and I'll probably, like, the next show will probably be about faith. And I realized that I didn't trust myself. And if I didn't trust myself, how can I expect other people to trust me? And this was my chance to kind of overcome that fear. And this is essentially what the revolution is about. It's about identifying fears within myself and having the courage to overcome them, to take that leap of faith. And so I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just gonna wing it, and whatever happens, happens. Like, what's the worst that could happen is like, I like freeze up, and then I'll just like play Robert's music and I'll try again later. So that's what I'm doing. So this is, for me, like in itself, just me doing this without it being scripted is like a huge act of faith. So I'm excited because at least I did that. So today's show is about love as a political concept. And actually Solomon was the one who introduced this lecture to me. Actually the first time we met, Solomon's here with me. I think I was talking either to Penty or something when China Art Objects was here still. And he was like, oh, you gotta meet Solomon, because I was talking about revolution. And so I met Solomon, and I was talking about love, and he was like, oh, you gotta see Michael Hart's lecture about love. And so I watched it, and I absolutely love it. You can watch it yourself. It's on YouTube. It's Michael Hart about love, and it's in 6 parts, and he did it in 2007 at the European Graduate School. Not only is it like pertinent to the revolution, but you know, I also used it. It was like became ammunition for me to like harass some girl that I had a crush on in the name of art, which I'll get into a little later. So the question guiding Michael Hart throughout this lecture is, what are the capacities people have now for collective self-transformation that could lead toward our being able to rule ourselves to make democracy possible? And his answer was, or the question that he posed was, love. Love is a thing that will allow us to have a collective self-transformation. And I totally believe that as well. And the key here is self-transformation. If I am not able to transform myself, there's no way that I can like transform society or the revolution or anyone. And in my personal experiences, I have found that love has been the only thing that has been able to truly like allow me to have a lasting or authentic, I guess, self-transformation, because I have tried to change in the name of revolution, in the name of being expansive, and you know, in the name of art or whatever. And it might have temporarily, like I might have been able to achieve it temporarily, but it was never lasting. Like when shit went down, when I was in prison or when like I was like homeless or whatever, like that perceived transformation that I thought that I had didn't stick because it wasn't based in love. And so I really believe that love needs to be the basis of all political action. And that's something that Michael Hart was also suggesting as well in this lecture. And not just love, but unadulterated love, like pure love. And that term, I actually stole or I adopted from my my life coach friend, Michael Blomsterberg. And actually a lot of like the principles of the revolution are heavily influenced by my relationship with Michael Blomsterberg, who I've been working with for the past like almost 4.5 years. So let me just give like a quick like shout out to him. I know that he's gonna be listening at some point. So thank you, Mike. Mike, you once told me that you're a better person because of knowing me. And I am such a better person because of knowing you. You have brought me back to myself in a way that I didn't know how to do. And it's interesting because like people would say to me who've known me and like, wow, you've really changed. Like you're not so angry or not so, you're more patient or whatever. And it's interesting because I feel like I've always been this way. But it's been like obscured. Like I've had, I had so many masks or personas because out of fear that I was unable to get to that kind of like, that like abundance, the feeling that I am enough for the mere fact that I exist. And that is actually principle one of the revolution. Principle one of the revolution is always operate from a place of abundance. And again, abundance is simply knowing with certainty that I am enough for the mere fact that I exist. And that shit's really hard to accomplish. It took me years and I'm still learning. But that is definitely the first principle. If you're interested in reading a detailed text on principle one of the revolution, which is definition of abundance and how to operate from a place of abundance, you can pick up the revolution approved literature in pocketbook form. There's some at Commonwealth and Council. And it's also online. Well, actually, it's not online yet because I'm still working on my website, but it will be. And that will kind of go into more detail about like the process, which is a relentless process of like awareness, of being kind to myself, and like really learning to love all the parts of me that I feel are worthless, where I'm not enough, all those uncomfortable feelings. If I learn to lean into them, as Michael would say, and learn to befriend them, they will always lead me to expansion. And for example, like the story I told you about how I was struggling with this whole show, through this work, I've really like learned about faith. And faith is basically knowing with certainty that everything's going to be okay. And if I'm operating from a place of abundance, my feelings, if I pay attention to them, will always lead me towards expansion. Always. Even like the super uncomfortable ones that I was feeling while preparing the show. If I'm able to sit with them, they will lead me to a belief that created the feeling in the first place. And that's what happened. It was basically, it led me to a fear that I had, the fear that I was like, that I was not gonna know what to say, that I that it had to be look a certain way, that it had to be perfect, that it had to, it was those kind of beliefs that I had that were then creating the feelings. Now, if I were operating from a place of lack and had those feelings, an example which I will get into is when I had this crush on this girl and I was definitely operating from a place of lack. I definitely did not feel like I was enough. I was using this woman to fill that need. You know, I didn't know at the time, but I was operating on this, like, I needed her to make me feel whole. Like if I got her, that would mean I was pretty enough, that I was sexy enough, that I was lovable, all those things. And so at the time I wasn't like aware that I was operating from a place of lack. And so my emotions, they went unchecked. And so it caused me to behave in very reactive ways. And I'll get into that later. So in the lecture, to go back to Hart's lecture, Hart identifies five ways in which love has been corrupted or destroyed as a political concept. And in doing so, Hart then hopes to return to a love that hasn't yet been realized. So the five ways are, number one, love of the same or as an identitarian concept, love being closed between the couple, the family, the race, the nation. I think this one is very, it seems so easy, but I think it's also very hard. I think a lot of times people are like, yeah, I love everyone. But when it comes down to it, it's like my family comes first. And I was actually thinking, like, I think like a good way of kind of gauging one's love, and if it's based in, if it's conditional, is if you can love a pedophile. I mean, everyone, like, not everyone, but most everyone hates pedophiles. Like, even prisoners hate pedophiles. Even murderers hate pedophiles. Like, you go to prison and you're a pedophile and they stab you. You know, no one likes a pedophile. Like, and I think if one can learn to love a pedophile, that is like, you are like the warrior of love. You are like the militant lover, and you are a true revolutionary, I think. Mr. Snuggles is chewing something. maybe I'll do a whole show on that, like how to love a pedophile. And you know, there's this guy, Brian Stevenson, who he does a lot of work with prisoners. And he said this thing about, like, he believes that people are more than the worst thing they've ever done. And if you lie, you're more than just a liar. If you steal something, you're more than just a thief. And even if you kill someone, you're more than just a murderer. And same thing goes with pedophiles. And it's about seeing, because, like, those behaviors are not who a person is. And to be able to see the light and the love of all human beings is a gift. And that's really what I like to operate, as well as the revolution, is to be able to see everyone as love and light. So the second way that love has been corrupted or destroyed as a political concept is segregation of eros and agape, or the segregation between the personal and the political. And this is one that I struggle with the most. And I'm just gonna, we'll talk about that later after I go through the five. So number three is love merging in unity. Love is, thus love is the destruction of difference. Now this is one that I'm not so sure of, just cause like I have this fantasy of like, everyone merging into one organism, like the third communal entity, and then we go and explore space. Kind of like in Olaf Stapleton's novel, The Star Maker. That's kind of what happens, like all these different like entities, they form one. And I don't know if that's so bad. 'Cause the idea also of the revolution and of the idea of abundance is that once I take care of my needs, once I know that I'm enough, I'm no longer seeking outside things to make me feel better, that abundance automatically overflows out of me onto others. And it's like the kind of like the inevitable thing that happens is that my focus goes to others, my love goes to others, because I no longer feel like I need to be taken care of, because I know that I am taken care of. And so to me, like the ultimate in this, and maybe, you know, I'll change my mind later, but like the ultimate would be for me to give up myself. And can I give up myself to merge in with humanity and then become something else? That I think would be incredible. And if I'm not wanting to do that, because you know the thing is like I may be operating from a place of abundance sometimes, but then in the next moment I might not be. And the idea is not like it's like a constant. I have to constantly check myself. I have to constantly put myself in faith. I have to constantly, question whether I'm in abundance or whether I'm operating from a place of lack. And, you know, sometimes the idea of merging into, like, the loss of self is scary. Because it's, you know, one thing is, like, it's the unknown. And, what does that mean to lose myself? And what does that look like? What does that feel like? It's almost like death. And I do have, like, issues with death, I've kind of realized. But, you know, that's, to me, is, like, an ultimate or one of the ultimate acts of courage. Okay, so that's three. Four is reduction of love to charity, the poor as object rather than subject of love. I think this one is also, I think it's related to the first one, which is love of the same or as an identitarian concept. And it's a lot, and the way that Michael Hart talked about it is about, in terms of charity. Like, does charity function to objectify the poor, or is it actually, like, you know, is it seeing them for a human being, like as I am? And, you know, I personally have, you know, I grew up with, I didn't say with money, but definitely, like, I grew up well-to-do, and my parents, you know, they worked hard, and they, you know, made sure that they, like, their whole, like, lives are about their kids, you know, and they had their own stuff, they had their own legal issues, they went to prison, too, I guess it runs in the family, they went to prison, I went to prison, but I've also had experiences being a drug addict, like, you know, being homeless, and, you know, having friends on the street, and then having gone to prison. And, like, the poor is not just, like, I mean, it's obviously, like, have to do with, like, like money, but it's also, like, being disenfranchised or somehow, you know, not having equal access to opportunities, resources, and information, that kind of stuff. So I'm really grateful for those experiences because they've really allowed me to experience that, you know, everyone is the same, really. So, and I really believe that. Okay, so the last one, number five, is love as a passion or a sensation, denying its productivity. Love is something that happens to us rather than love as a productive act. Now, this is the thing, this is the one that I used as a way to, as an attempt to seduce this girl that I had a crush on. I had this, like, idea that, like, and, like, Michael Hart talks about, like, how, you know, or does he talk about this, or maybe I did, about desire, and how, or no, he did talk about, like, how when we're in love, experiencing love, we are different. We are different, and I totally believe that too. And so my idea was, like, even my desire, this unrequited love that I felt, I don't know if it was love, but it was definitely, like, a desire. If I was able to take that and channel it into, take that which is in the personal realm, and channel it into something in the public realm, maybe like art, then it becomes a productive force. And that's kind of what I focused my project on. And I almost got her to participate, but she backed out at the last minute. And that didn't turn out well. So let me go back to, oh my God, I've talked so much. Okay, let me go back to the segregation of Eros and Agape. Okay, so the reason I struggle with this, because I've never had a long-term romantic relationship. Except for when I was like, this guy I was with for 4.5 years, but we were like using drugs and it was kind of mostly about that. But like the longest relationship I've had outside of that has been like 8 months and I'm 39. So, you know, I struggle with this. Back in 1992, I was an undergrad in college, and I made this deal with this cosmic entity that I called Bob, that I would sacrifice all romantic relationships so that my art career would flourish. And the reason why I did that was because I didn't like who I became when I was in these relationships. I was like the stereotypical like crazy girlfriend. I remember in high school, I once cut up my boyfriend's clothes, some of which were like his grandfather's keepsakes, because he wouldn't come over when he said he would. Like crazy shit like that. And I would like get consumed and obsessed, and I really did not like that. So my solution to that was to just cut it out of my life, you know, cut it out and not have to deal with it. And I went and you know, it worked for the period. Like for the next 3 years, I didn't like have sex or any romantic relationships with anyone, and I totally produced like a lot of work, and it was great. But, you know, 20 years later, you know, I'm starting to wonder, like, either I cursed myself or, you know, or, well, I kind of lean toward I cursed myself. But after hearing this, and I kind of resigned to the fact, like, this is how it's going to be. And in this lecture that Hart gave, he used Che Guevara as an example of the segregation between Eros and Agape. And Che has been known to he believed that revolutionaries are a breed apart from ordinary population who are able to have Eros, and revolutionaries don't have the luxury of Eros. All their love must go to the people. And when I heard this, I'm like, yes, that's how I feel. Like, that means I'm a true revolutionary, you know. And it was like about like this, like it like kind of tapped into this feeling that I like to feel of being like a martyr. Or like, you know, like sacrificing, and like, but it's full of pathos, and it's also tied in with my identity of wanting to be a revolutionary and what I think it means to be a revolutionary, which at the time was like all about, not all about, but a lot of it was sacrifice. But once I heard this lecture, and Hart identified that as one of the ways love has been corrupted or destroyed as a political concept, I started questioning that. And like, what am I getting from that? What am I getting from this segregation? What I'm getting, you know, it's making me feel okay with it. It's even like making me feel better than or different. And the whole idea about the revolution is not really about that. It's more about like a sense of connection, belonging. And I can see also how this is problematic, because if I cannot behave the same way, like how I behave publicly, if I can't behave like in a similar expansive way as I am in my private life, that's like a problem, you know? And I think, that's why the show, like how Robert was, you know, stated in the introduction, that it's about like breaking down the barriers between public and private space, and the personal and the political, the individual and the populous. And so if I really truly want to function out of love, unadulterated love, I got to really look into that. I got to look into why I'm segregating Eros and Agape. So, you know, I started thinking about my past relationships, and probably the most healthiest one was the relationship I had when I was in prison. Even though like there was a time when she wasn't, like in the beginning of the relationship, she was like, I don't know, like withholding. Like, I don't know. I know that she was doing it for her own, like to take care of herself, but I like perceived it as her like playing games or like withholding her attention from me, and it drove me crazy. So like it's like those moments that I have to question. And similar with like before that, like I was in a relationship with this guy who I call my RPL, revolution partner / lover, and we were dating like a month before I went to prison. And I, like, when I was out on the streets, it was, like, great. Like, I was not, like, obsessed or, I felt like I had healthy kind of, like, separation. I felt like I was, you know, taking care of myself. And then as soon as I went to prison, like, all that shit fell apart, you know, and I became, like, the crazy, like super insecure, like, person. And like a lot of my letters were like, oh my God, like, are you gonna leave me? And like totally like analyzing it and obsessing about it, the reasons why and like the possibilities of what might happen and da da da. So it's like those moments are for me like really telling of, you know, how what's really the stuff that's really deep inside of me. And that, in essence, is what the adventuring within is to go in and dig out that shit that is, like, I don't want to look at. I'm going to tell you a funny story. What time is it? I feel like, oh my God. I feel like I have to end soon, but okay. No, okay. Okay, this is like sort of a funny story, but okay, in high school, in my geometry class, I farted in class, and I was so like humiliated that because the farting was not the worst part of it. The worst part of it was that I tried to deny that shit. You know, like I like farted. Hey, I even have a fart sound that I can play for you guys. It was kind of like this. It was a loud fart. It even surprised me. Can they hear that? It was like, I was like laughing, and then all of a sudden like this fart came out of me, and I wasn't expecting it, and I was like totally humiliated. And after like people were laughing, and then this girl from across the room was like, oh my God, Jennifer, was that you? And she didn't even say it like mean or anything. It was more like more in awe, like that sound came out of me. And I was so humiliated that I was like, no. And I tried to explain that, I tried to like blame it on the chair, and like proceeded to explain how the chair made the sound. It was like horrible. And of course I didn't go to school the next day, or maybe even like the whole week. And I never talked about that incident until somewhat recently with my friend Kelly, who will probably come in September and co-host a show with me. And I, cause that feeling, like I think humiliation and shame are like the feelings that, at least for me, are the most difficult to feel. And when and like I had, there's still like that was one of the memories that I would think about sometimes. It would like creep into my consciousness. I'd be like, no, don't think about it, don't think about it. And like I shoot away. And it wasn't until I was like willing to really feel the shame and the humiliation that I was really able to understand it. Because it wasn't the fart. I thought it was the fart that I was like ashamed about or humiliated about, but it wasn't that. It was my denial of it that I was really like, that I felt shame about. Like I couldn't even fucking cop to it. So that is the shit that I'm interested in. That's the stuff that like the metaphorical farts that I have that I'm so wanting to push away. That's the stuff that I'm interested in, because those are the things that lead me to greater awareness, as well as greater compassion for myself, which then allows me to have more compassion for others and the world. And it's also interesting to notice what are the masks or the personas that I then create to cover up that shame. You know, like do I become like the kind of like the righteous snob, or maybe I become like the sad victim, or maybe I become like the silly clown, you know, like those in those moments to be aware of the characters I produce to cover up that feeling of shame. And that's the stuff that I'm really interested in. I think those are the real gems, and I would invite you guys to adventure within with me and to dig out the shame, the worthlessness, the embarrassment, the humiliation, the, you know, the sadness, the anger, all those emotions that like are sometimes difficult to feel, because those will bring you back to yourself. And this is something that I've learned from Michael. That I've really learned to really honor those feelings, to cherish them. And it has brought me like a certain freedom from myself that I haven't ever, you know, really experienced before. And from that freedom, it allows me to then put myself out there. It gives me courage to create things, to create venues that then encourage other people to do the same. And that is really essentially what the revolution is about. And that's, you know, I didn't really get into the story of the girl. Maybe I'll say it for next time, but I feel like I talked a lot. And so the second part, or the part, not the second part, but like part of my part of the show is the song that we sing together. Okay, the song that we sing together is a song that we sing together. And tonight's song is from Leanne Womack, and it's called I Hope You Dance. And I just a note, I am not trying to be ironic. I really love this song. I really actually don't, I am almost always sincere at all times. So I hope that when you listen to this song, you can really, that you listen to the lyrics and, I don't know, be open to it, maybe? If you want to sing along, you can probably, and if you're at a computer, you can Google I Hope You Dance lyrics. The artist is Leanne Womack. And I hope that you sing along with me. I think that this, I would love, like the feeling of having a collective experience, I think is very powerful. So I'll play the song and then we'll sing along.
I
love this song. I hope you dance. I hope you dance. I will never give up. I love you, Leanne. Wow, that song is so beautiful. Wow, it's very echoey. Well, that's it for my segment. Please continue to listen as I play a playlist that was selected by Robert Watkins. I always think like this segment that Robert is responsible for, it's like a chance to meditate on all that we discussed tonight. And I hope that you return the second Tuesday of every month and come adventure with me again. The next broadcast will be on August 14th. And let me just leave you with a couple quotes, one from Michel Foucault, which is one of the principles to the art of living, counter to all forms of fascism. And a reminder again from Leanne Womack. Do not think that one has to be sad in order to be militant. Never settle for the path of least resistance. When you come close to selling out, reconsider. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, just dance.
Something about you, when I'm without you, thinking I just want. is nothing, and nothing is funnier than nothing, yeah. And misery is hungry, and souls are what it eats. It devours all your insides and leaves you lighter than the breeze. And misery is money, as money ties you down. But there's nowhere I'd rather be when it starts to smack me around. You're doing too.
This has been a production of Faction 2 of The Revolution. For more information on The Revolution, visit jmoon.net and click on The Revolution. You have been listening to Adventures Within. Join us on the second Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock for another episode of Adventures Within on Kaechung Radio.